Don't be alarmed. The quasi-shimmering light before you is a trans-dimensional gateway to other worlds, other voices, other thoughts, and other realities. Up feels like down, and down feels like the number 7 on a Wednesday morning. Don't worry. That quivering, blood-boiling sensation under your eyebrows is all a part of the charm. Welcome to the PCC Multiverse.
And we're back with another episode of the PCC Multiverse. This is Gerald Glassford. Thanks so much again for joining us. Please support all the great shows and all the great things that we do out there, including, of course, Pop Culture Cosmos, Inside Sports, Fantasy Football, The Lakers Fast Break, and, of course, Vampires and Vitae. Please support all these great entities, if you can, by liking, sharing, and subscribing. And, of course, that magical 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts. But it wouldn't be a PCC Multiverse without my good friend. Indeed, she is the mistress of macabre when it comes to everything that she's doing to haunt her husband's life.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
That takes place, though, on Vampires and Vitae. Please go ahead and see how she sinks her teeth into her husband and her fellow players in Vampires and Vitae on all the great episodes that they have there going on. It is Melinda Barkhouse-Ross. And Melinda, great to have you here. I was going to go ahead and start drifting my eyes up as far as the camera is going.
Hang on, because now, I mean, it's been technical problem after technical problem. And now that we're actually live, my phone just doesn't want to stay still. So just
actually, it's good right now. It stopped. It's good.
I will try to figure that out, but
it's good. It's good.
What a day. Let's try some dice. See if that'll help.
There you go. Absolutely. No, it seems to be setting right now. Seems to be staying where it's at. But yeah, it is, of course, the PC Multiverse. Thanks so much again for watching, listening. Shout out to all the radio stations around the world that play us right here each and every week. We've got lots to talk about this time around, including some Shogun, the Summer of Shyamalan, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, a very controversial old school video game is being released this week for altogether different reasons. The controversy is there. And Taylor Swift. Gee, what a shock. People listen once again. Plus more. And of course, Star Trek Discovery as well for our Star Trek fans out there. It is, of course, a PCC Multiverse. Melinda, let's start off with the last thing that we checked off our list this week, which is the season or series, depending on how you see it. Could there be season 2? Maybe. We'll see. Of Shogun, which ended its run after 10 episodes. And you and I, for 9 weeks, were praising this show, singing the tune of all the great episodes. And then, of course, it ended on episode 9. Spoilers out there. One of the main characters, probably the character carrying the entire series, passed away in episode 9, leaving you with a jumbled mess of an episode 10. Your thoughts on episode 10? It was just truly a spectacular ride, but it had a Game of Thrones style last episode ending.
Yeah, it was a tough ending. But I think that It was an interesting ending, and it's what and perhaps this is coming a little bit from Vampire LARP, but I really want there to be a hero that just brings peace, and that's what they do. And I feel like that's what they were going for with that finale, that final episode. I feel like there was something to that I was getting anyway. And I just think that it's time for us to just have a hero who is good again. Do you remember when we did that? There wasn't like the anti-hero that sits on the throne. It was the genuinely good guy.
Well, he's not exactly the good guy we thought he was.
You're that good at manipulating politics and things like that, I don't think that you're necessarily all good. But I think that your actions when it comes to the greater whole is key there. And I think that he does have peace for Japan kind of front and center in his machinations.
Yeah, but he also has a little bit of power that we hungered, that we didn't know about it. You know, the title of Shogun that, you know, of course, Torinaga said he didn't want at the beginning of the series. He actually craved all along and was willing to go ahead and send people to their deaths and kill and do things that we did not expect him to do so. But it's also the things that were put in the last episode, like a flash forward scene, a couple flash forward scenes of Blackthorn as an old man on his final days. I don't understand why that's there. It was really absolutely no need to have it there. It just absolutely was very ill-fitting. It's like got shoehorned in there. I don't understand why that's there. He's also was, you know, as he cradled, because the episode itself starts off basically with the last moments of what happened in episode 9. And in episode 10, you see him cradling his love, Mariko, and obviously weeping for, you know, because of her death. Then all of a sudden he's out in a coma for a couple weeks. They've already buried her. He missed that. I'm like thinking to myself, he seemed well enough when he was holding Mariko in his arms. Then all of a sudden he's in a coma. It just the things, whatever storytelling elements that you did so well and so right for 9 episodes seemed to go off the rails in episode 10. And, you know, you talked about this. I talked about how it was television at its best for 9 episodes in 2024. Yeah, I can't say that right now for episode 10.
Well, I mean, you know, it could be a case of that finale needing a little bit of time for you to live with and maybe go back and rewatch it. Sometimes I find, because I feel like this needed a complicated ending because it was such a complicated story. So it could be just having to go back and rewatch that finale or the last 3 episodes. Sometimes when you sit down and you watch them collectively all together, back to back to back, you can pick up on things that you might not have, that you might've missed or that you may have really just frankly forgotten about between, you know, the breaks between the shows. So, you know, there could be something to that as well, because there have been finales that I have hated that I've gone back and rewatched and been like, oh, okay, you know, that did actually make a whole lot of sense. So I can't account for all of the jumping around and stuff like that that they did do, but, you know, him ending up in a coma, there's tons of injuries that you can get that may lead to that kind of a reaction much after the fact, once the adrenaline has worn away. There's like, you know, there's lots of reasons to have ended up there. So who knows? I'm sure there's some kind of very clever explanation for a lot of that.
I hope you can find out what that is, because I certainly don't know what that is. I know I'd be speaking to Jeff Sloboda about it at some point in time in the near future, and also as well Don Fobbs, because it has been so much out in the forefront. It's gotten tremendous ratings on both Hulu, FX, and Disney Plus. So again, I'm happy for the success. Can it lead to a season 2? I don't know how, when you killed off the best part of the series. Don't know exactly where you would go from there. And in fact, I know it finishes off the book itself in the way episode 10 kind of goes through about its business. But yeah, very incomplete end to what was 9 episodes of absolute brilliance. And Yabushigwe, let's go ahead and one last thing on Yabushigwe. You know, because he was there at the time when they were trying to escape the castle in episode 9, and he was helping undermine in his usual, oh, I'm working for both sides type deal throughout the entire series. But he somehow has PTSD and goes crazy for the first 15 to 20 minutes of the episode, then somehow is very lucid and fine when it comes to where he gets back to meet with Torinaga. And it's just fine with his conversations well, before you. It just,
you know, sometimes you just need to have that little break before you can put yourself back together and continue on with your day. That's never happened for you, Gerald.
Well, okay. You could see he was trying to go off the deep end earlier in the episode, yet he's just fine just in a matter of moments if you watch the episode. So I don't know. Was he trying to fool individuals all along? Once again, probably. But, you know, it wasn't very good either. It didn't fit. And that's the thing about episode 10, the thing that I'm going to say the most is that it didn't fit with the rest of the actual series. And it was a shame how it ended up. It just, again, just very Game of Thrones-ish. And I say that not in a good way as far as the way they ended up the series, if it is over indeed. So I don't know. We'll go ahead and keep you reported and keep your breast if Shogun does get revived somehow for a season 2.
I hope it does. It was so good.
Where would you go?
Hard to say. I mean, the easy answer is we go to England, but then you're just following Blue-Eyed Samurai. And maybe I just want Blue-Eyed Samurai back so badly that I'm trying to force Shogun to go in that direction. Incredibly different stories, but...
That was better, and even though I did talk about the open ending that didn't close enough, tie enough knots on that show, but it was better than what we saw out of what the ending was for Shogun. But we'll wait and see. But it is, of course, Shogun, the series. If you have thoughts on it, we'd love to hear them, because it was, for 9 episodes, some of the best television this year. Mm-hmm. Please go ahead and let us know your thoughts, popculturecosmos@yahoo.com.
For the latest news and information, analysis and opinions on the Los Angeles Lakers and the NBA, check out the Lakers Fast Break podcast today on wherever you get your podcasts.
But there's still so much more to talk about on today's program. Did you know, Melinda, I know you haven't checked your calendar lately, but did you know this is the summer of Shyamalan?
I did not know, no.
Yes, so a reason why I say that is M. Night Shyamalan, you know, the great director who's directed many movies, although he hasn't quite found the success of the early 2000s that he once did, and even in the 2010s, as your phone slides up again, when he was doing the Glass and Invincible series, you know, movies, when he was finishing that trilogy off, he hasn't found the success really since then. But he does have a busy summer plan, because first up, his daughter in a movie he produced called The Watchers is coming out.
Oh man, yes, it looks so good. Sorry.
Yes. So, and then also after that, we just saw the debut trailer for a movie that's coming out a couple months of, actually, I think The Watchers is coming out in June. The movie that he made with his other daughter, one of the stars in the picture. In fact, she plays, well, I'll get into it in a second. It's called Trap with Josh Hartnett. I don't know if you saw that trailer came out last week. And that one, I think, is the one that I want to talk about most. I know you're excited about The Watchers. We'll see what happens. It's his daughter's first foray into directing and writing. So we'll see. And of course, you know, he had a hand in it. So it's going to be very supernaturalistic and tinge on horror. So it looks like it's going to be something there that a lot of people might be interested in. But it is Trap that gets my interest more. And the reason why I say that is because it's the story of a father and a daughter going to what it's very closely emulating the Taylor Swift fanaticism about going to a concert. His daughter, Shyamalan's daughter, real life daughter, is playing I forget her actual character name, but she is the Taylor Swift character that they're going to see in this concert. So she's the one performing it. He's there and with his daughter, and they're enjoying it like a father and daughter. It's really, really cool to see. And then he says, I'm going to go to the bathroom, be right back. He notices when he's going to the bathroom, or when he goes and leaves out into the arena, that there's a whole bunch of police surrounding it and there's cameras being set up. So he talks to one of the hot dog vendors. What's going on, man? He said the police are surrounding the building because they think they've caught that, or they've got the, they set out a trap, quote unquote, trap, movie there, for this killer. That's, I guess, a serial killer that's been on the loose. So they've set a trap for him, and they believe they have him inside the arena. Oh, my gosh. It's kind of scary, right?
Yeah.
Well, lo and behold, and this is what irks me, is because M. Night Shyamalan, known for his twists, shows it to you already on the screen. Or is it, as we see in the next scene, Josh Hartnett run over to the restroom, look at his smartphone to make sure that the prisoner he has in his house is still chained.
Yeah.
And desperately seeking for help. So your thoughts on this, the reason why I'm kind of irked by it is that it seemingly gives away the twist already, where you could have kept that under wraps and made it, I don't know, even more interesting. It might, I'm assuming Shyamalan has another twist on hand on top of this, but
there has to be.
It would have been nice if you just kept that twist under wraps as well.
No, that just, to me, that just indicates that this is a much twistier and much turnier story than we anticipate it to be. If he's showing you that much in the trailer, it has to be a wild ride.
Okay. I certainly hope so, but it's very interesting to see how this is going to play out. Again, I thought it would have been nice if you just kept it under wraps and would have been, you know, just for me, kind of nice if they did the double twist and kept that all both under wraps. But again,
there could be a triple twist. There could be a quadruple trip. There could be an octuple trip twist. We don't know. But I have, you know, in Shyamalan, I tend to trust even when it's bad. So we'll see.
Well, his career has not progressed, you know, box office wise in the way that I think a lot of people had expected, because he was, you know, obviously around the turn of the century, he was the predominant master of macabre and horror that was out there. And even in the teens last year, he had, last decade, he had several films still that were doing okay. I wish he would have made the Invincible trilogy a little bit better. I wish the ending of Glass would have been better. I think it would have been better if you added an extra $10, $20 million in budget to have that climactic scene on top of the building that they were teasing for you, which they never did. Instead, they had it out in the parking lot, and there you go. But I want to say that The Summer of Shyamalan, I'm hoping that he will have, and his daughter will have success. His daughters will find that success this summer, because again, having Shyamalan's back on the right side of things will probably make it good for movie fans out there.
Yeah, I'm always interested to see what's going to happen with his movies, and I think that just the fact that they show that in the trailer, it feels to me like it's going to be a bigger twist and things. Well, I mean, even just that tells me that there's going to be some kind of twist off of that. So yeah, I'm ready to buckle up and enjoy the ride.
Okay, absolutely. So what does everyone out there think of what's going on with, of course, what we've seen with the Summer of Shyamalan, with The Watchers coming up in June, and then what's coming up in August with Trap with Josh Hartnett? Interesting trailers for both. Please let us know your thoughts, popculturecosmos@yahoo.com. But before we head to the break, wanted to go ahead and talk a little bit more about what's coming out of the box office this weekend. Challengers, which we've discussed a little bit. I know Josh and I discussed a little bit more. That's coming out this weekend. That should top the box office. I think it's going to do more than what the $15 million domestically is projected to do. I think it would be more. And the reason why I say that is because I think this is very much a younger generation's movie, and I think they will come out to support it. Zendaya in this normally, I guess what this type of genre, the tennis movie, is usually not going to compel people to go ahead and see, but the love triangle, the three-way love triangle, as it were, is garnering very, very strong reviews. It is one of the best reviewed movies of this year, and a lot of it is due to the power of Zendaya. And Zendaya has done what many people are talking about, a really good job in this film after doing a really good job in Dune Part 2. So your thoughts on this, on where challengers can go? I think it'll do a little bit better than expected. Look out for that, because I think that this is a movie that younger audiences, I'm talking about the 20s, early 30s, that generation, I really think, in fact, even maybe even younger, talking about 16 to 20, this is the type of movie that's advertised for them. And I have a feeling that they will come out to support this movie.
Yeah, I think so. I think if you attach Zendaya to any project, really, you're just automatically kind of punching your ticket to attract that particular demographic. Not a thing wrong with that either. You know, sometimes I know we talk a lot about sometimes how the older demographics kind of, you know, no real movies come out specifically targeted towards them and things like that. And, you know, sometimes there's an agreement there and, you know, maybe the movies are a little less exciting than, you know, what the Zendaya and her generation of actors have been putting out. But I think that once you start to, you know, focus in on that particular demographic and you give them something besides like another typical teen movie or another animated movie that's a kid's movie dressed up as an adult's movie, you know, if you start to give them a little bit more selection, I think that you're going to be pretty surprised at how savvy that demographic actually is when it comes to the things that they choose to support.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's something that we'll definitely see more support for. I think this movie does similar to what Dune Part 2 did, with Timothée Chalamet and Zendaya, trying to appeal to a younger demographic that has not always matriculated to the theaters or has been some of the slowest group of individuals to matriculate to the theaters. We talked about before how older audiences after COVID have not matriculated to theaters as quickly as they once did. We see the same thing with the, you know, younger audiences as well. And I'm not talking about the youngest audiences, but I'm talking about the teenagers, right? In 15 to 30 have not matriculated to the theaters as quickly as they hoped. And in a year where it's not have been as strong as even 2023 is concerned, the box office could use all the help it can get.
Yeah, I think that a lot of that too is coming down to the prohibitive cost of really going to the movies. It is quite expensive. That particular demographic is really suffering right now as we go through, you know, whatever turmoil it is that the politicians have added to whatever it is that's happening right now that makes money so hard to have in your pocket. So, you know, I think that that is something that the movie companies are certainly working against, is just the economic reality of what it is for that demographic in particular right now.
So we'll see, but I think it, you know, because of the fact it is doing so well critically, and I think it is such a strongly, supported as far as on a critical level movie, I think it will get the kind of at least first week kind of love from that audience that I think it sorely needs. So we'll see what happens, but it is challengers. Please go ahead and check it out. I know that it is probably going to be the leader at the box office this weekend. How well it will do, we'll go ahead and talk about on the Monday show, but want to hear your thoughts. Are you interested in checking out Zendaya's latest film, Challengers? Please let us know, popculturecosmos@yahoo.com. But before we head to the break and we talk a little bit more extensively on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, our annual conversation on that, I wanted to go ahead and, speaking of something as far as resonating with the younger generation, Taylor Swift, her latest album as far as the success of how it's done. Let's just say that Spotify has said thank you, Taylor, because if for the first time an artist has gone over a billion hours, as far as a billion hours, I think it is, in as far as listening to all the song, as far as the Tortured Poets album, as far as hits 1 billion streams. I'm sorry, 1 billion Spotify streams in a week with Tortured Poets Department. So your thoughts on just the phenomenon of Taylor Swift, and do you think, because it's the reason why I added this in there for this week, do you think she is the greatest artist of this era? I know that's going to create a lot of controversy. Ooh, and a lot of talk, but you talk about the Beatles, what you talk about Elvis, you talk about Beatles, and then you're
Michael Jackson.
I think she has reached that rarefied air. I know that's probably going to get a lot of backlash on it. I think Beyonce is getting in that range as well, but that's just me. Your thoughts on Taylor Swift? Has she reached that, or will she, if she stopped right now, would she have reached that rarefied air?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that this concert has proven what she's capable, like this tour. I mean, sorry, I don't mean any one particular concert. I mean, this entire tour that she's on right now, I think it has really shown exactly what she's capable of. I mean, she has changed the economy of cities when her tour touches, cities. So that idea is wild enough. And then you add in, you know, what she's managed to do now with the Tortured Poets Department. I mean, she feels really unstoppable. And I know that we've talked about it before, but, you know, once this tour is over, I really do hope that her and her football playing boyfriend really find some time to find some corner of the earth where they can just be like people and not be superstars and sports entertainment stars and things like that. I hope that she does have someone around her that is helping her to keep some level of normalcy in her life. I know that having her parents with her is very important to her. So I hope that that's helping a little bit there. But I cannot quantify in my brain what that level of success must feel like. Somebody says you don't understand how much $1 billion is. I don't understand the level of fame that Taylor Swift has achieved. I can't wrap my head around it. It's the craziest thing to me. What a wild ride. And you can't say that the girl has not earned it. You know, she's put in the time. She's put in the work. She has made smart decisions. She's made questionable decisions. But I just think that Taylor Swift has proven that she is a force, and I'm here to watch the ride. I am enjoying everything that I'm seeing from Taylor. So I'm thrilled for her. I'm happy for her. And I can't wait to see what she's going to keep doing.
Well, definitely, if you know, think that if you don't put her in that category now, you're going to at some point in time in the near future, as far as that rarefied air with the icons of music, or popular music of the past 100 years. Because if you don't, then you'd be just selling yourself short. The fact that her name now just elicits something from every corner of the earth, from every walk of life.
Yeah,
she has reached a level of fame and popularity that reaches all corners of the world. And I think that's a rare thing indeed. Icons of the music industry, including Elvis, the Beatles, Michael Jackson. Please let us know if she's reached that level for you. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com.
What is Planet Cool Stuff? It's your ultimate destination for insightful exploration from the realm of pop culture. Delve into the world of movies, video games, toys, cartoons, and visit with one-of-a-kind creators, discover incredible places, and see historical artifacts. Whether it's a toy room tour or exploring the best of pop culture cinema, Planet Cool Stuff has got you covered. Planet Cool Stuff, exclusively on Jinx Esports TV Canada.
Well, 1/2 hour down, 1/2 hour to go here on the Pop Culture Cosmos. And of course, what we're doing right now, the PCC Multiverse. It is Gerald Glassford along with Melinda Barkhouse Ross. Melinda, kind of snuck up on us. Been asking, trying to arrange for weeks on our normal outlet, what we do with a special that we usually cover for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But this year, unfortunately, they announced it, and we were trying to arrange some things for it. Couldn't quite get it done because they snuck them out there and announced the inductees for this year as far as the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is concerned. And I want to go ahead first and congratulate all the individuals involved. So I want to get the list out here. Is Mary J. Blige, Cher, Dave Matthews Band, Foreigner, Peter Frampton, Cool and the Gang, Ozzy Osbourne, and A Tribe Called Quest.
That's a great class this year.
Yes. The Musical Influence Awards winners are Alexis Corner, John Mayall, and Big Mama Thornton. And the Music Excellence Award winners are the late Jimmy Buffett, MC5, Dionne Warwick, Norman Whitfield, and the Ahmet Erdogan Award is to Suzan de Pass. But again, there were quite a few individuals as far as the nominees is concerned that didn't get in, like Mariah Carey. That was a surprise to me. Jane's Addiction, Sade, Sinead O'Connor, Oasis, Lenny Kravitz, and Eric B. and Rakim. So,
Lenny Kravitz is going to end up in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He is going to, just not this year.
Well, with that said, let me hear your thoughts on the actual inductees, the main inductees, the Mary J. Blige, Cher, Dave Matthews Band, Foreigner, Peter Frampton, Kool and the Gang, Ozzy Osbourne, and A Tribe Called Quest. Your thoughts on this group of inductees to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
The only one that I'm a little bit surprised about, and, you know, it's just because I hadn't, you know, gone, I haven't listened to any of their music in decades at this point. Yeah, decades, gross. Is the Dave Matthews Band. That's a little bit surprising to me. But then you go back and you think about, you know, the moment in time where the Dave Matthews Band was kind of the band, and you're like, oh yeah, right. I mean, I get it. I can see it. It makes sense, I suppose. I don't think that they've gotten anything wrong this year. I think that this is a solid class. I think that everybody in it makes sense for them to be inducted. And I'm thrilled for Cher.
I think that Cher was to me an automatic. I don't think you could discount anything that she's done beforehand with Sonny and Cher. And now obviously with her, how she branched out into her own decades full of great music. And then of course, I think with Dave Matthews Band, I think their success in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s, I think solidified them. Plus they don't have those marquee songs that have like topped the charts continuously. They just have that following. They remind me of, you know, like the Grateful Dead. They just have that following of hundreds of thousands of people that are willing to go ahead and support them in any arena across this country or around the world. And they have some great movies. I like Grey Street, though. Grey Street is one of my favorite songs from them. I do want to give that a shout out. But again, I think all the inductees are worth it. Peter Frampton, you can say what you want. He was an icon of the 70s. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's just saluting his greatness then. But I really think Mariah Carey off this list. If there's any of the list of the inductees or nominees that you think got, I don't want to say jobbed is a bad word for it, but just not given the chance to go ahead and Oasis, I get. Oasis, as far as not including them, I get, because the fact that their run was short. So I understand that they were a late 90s band, and I really don't think that, you know, they had the length of time that as a great band at that level, maybe to sustain itself. Sinead O'Connor, beautiful voice, one of the most beautiful voices ever, but how many songs outside of one did she really score and resonate right. with for a long time?
Excuse me. Yeah.
So I'm afraid when Rock and Roll Hall of Fame gives inductees to individuals or inducts individuals for a short window as opposed to a longer sustainable career, Mariah Carey is the one I can't figure out. I really can't figure out how you go ahead and bypass her, because we talked about just now before the break, we talked about the level of success Taylor Swift and Beyonce have reached. Mariah Carey didn't get to quite that level, but she was one of the major stars of the 90s and 2000s, those two decades there, and how you oversight her and how you overlook her. I'm not a fan of her music per se, but just the fact alone, if you want to go based off of one song, All I Want for Christmas Is You is the most best-selling Christmas song of all time. But, you know, her number of songs and albums that have reached the top of the charts in the 90s and 2000s, and starting in the late 80s, you could go back to. I just don't think you could deny that. And I'm really just scratching my head why you didn't induct her into the Hall of Fame.
Well, and, it's not to say that she's not going to be inducted next year or the year after. Cher, it took decades, right?
Yeah. She's even said plenty about not going to the Hall of Fame or what the Hall of Fame can do herself for when she got denied before. I get that. I understand that.
Yeah. But no, I do think that I think Mariah Carey is a natural fit. I think she's going to end up in there eventually. It's just not this year. That's all. Mariah Carey, Lenny Kravitz, they're missing. But I see them both ending up in eventually. Give them a couple more years, maybe a couple more decades, the way that the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame seems to do things sometimes. But they're going to end up in there. There's no question.
Okay. Well, let's hope they don't have the same lack of love from the committee that the Monkees have continually gotten. That's a sore spot. I know that that's actually something we've discussed on this show before, as far as the Monkees, because the fact it is something that's behind the scenes, there is some true hatred at the top levels of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for them. So despite their success and rebirth that they were able to achieve before, most of the individuals pass away in the group, they will never achieve that status. And that's a shame, because, again, there's some political things going on behind the scenes with that. But again, Mariah Carey, I just don't think you can deny she's achieved a level of success as the number one artist in the world for quite a few years in the 90s. And I just think you just cannot deny that at some point.
Yeah, no, and I don't think that anybody is denying it. I think it's just...
they're denying it.
Well, this year is just not her year. I mean, at least she's in the conversation.
Yeah, that's a good point. But again, we'll see what happens. But it is, of course, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Are you satisfied with the individuals that were inducted to the Hall of Fame? Once again, the main performers category is Mary J. Blige, Cher, Dave Matthews Band, Foreigner, Peter Frampton, Kool & the Gang, Ozzy Osbourne, and A Tribe Called Quest. I think this is a solid group, a very solid group of individuals. I don't think any one of them you could complain or kind of scratch your head on. I think all of them are very just deserved.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't have any problems with anyone in the induction class this week, inductee class.
Well, we'll see about next year, and then next year we will try to get our act together, pardon the pun, and see if we can go ahead and get somebody on, a specialist, or if it's just Melinda and I want to see if we can go ahead and spend an episode again going back and forth on that, because it was a very fun episode every year that we do it. So we will go ahead and make sure that we provide that for you this time next year. But what are your thoughts on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for 2024, the list of inductees? Please let us know. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com. Well, there's still much more to talk about on today's show. Speaking of controversy that we talked about earlier, Stellar Blade, a roguelike, Souls-like game. Gee, once, that style of game came out, it's been now being, I don't want to say done to death, but it's...
but kind of.
Kind of, yes. It got released into the wild in recent days, and with Stellar Blade, which I believe is that a PlayStation exclusive?
I'm not sure, but I did just see PlayStation 5 release dates, and I'm not seeing it for anything else, but also, you know, keep in mind that my stuff, I always Google PS5 on it because, you know, we have the PS5. So it could just be showing me those results automatically.
Well, I'll check that out for sure. But I think it is.
It might be, yeah.
But if that's the case, the thing I want to ask you, and it looks like it is, yeah, because there's only listings for it in PS5.
Yeah.
There's a lot of controversy with this game, not because of the game itself. It's just an average Souls-like game as far as what the reviews and ratings and what I've seen as far as the footage is concerned. It's the actual touch on an old school type of Japanese style of artistry, I should say, with the main character or characters modeled after much of the way characters were designed predominantly by Japanese studios in the 90s and 2000s.
I think I'm following. Okay. Yes.
So and back then it was very much accepted and very much, I guess, approved at that point in time as far as how the characters looked. And if you're not following me right now on it, I'll just say there's a lot of endowment.
Yes.
There was a lot of endowment on characters, very sexualized.
Yes.
They is probably just point blank on there as far as back in those days. And that was pretty much accepted at that point in time. These days in 2024, I guess tastes have changed, and there's now a lot of outcry and the fact I think that we should be more cognizant. There are a lot more, the player base is now quite more even between males and females that play on consoles these days than what they did 20 years ago. And in doing so, and you bring out this game with the stylized characters, the sexualized characters, as you were, especially the main protagonist, I ask you, is that still okay to do in 2024? I mean, because again, this is getting a lot of brushback, this game, because of how it looks and how it has that old school feel, for better or worse. So I want to hear your thoughts on this again, as someone who does play PS5, saw this listing for the PS5, seeing the characters that are in this game for the PS5, is this something as far as Stellar Blade that still should exist in 2024? Or is it something that makes you want to say, you know what, I think I'm going to move on to something else?
Honestly, I think the necessity for this kind of design for a character is not necessary anymore. I believe that at one point in time, it was probably very necessary in order to attract attention to your game and to pull a bit of an audience in. There's probably still a pretty significant portion of video game players who would find this appealing. I don't find it offensive myself. I find it offensive when a main character is designed as this one is, and they become useless in the game. That's to me is where it becomes offensive. And it doesn't look like that's the case with this one, just from some of the, and again, this is cursor, you know, the first time really kind of scrolling deeper into some of the imagery and stuff from the game. And it looks like she stays pretty fearsome, and it looks like she can fight her way through just about all of it. So as long as you balance that stuff with actual game mechanics and making that main character a force to be reckoned with, I have much less of a problem with it. I love seeing attractive women, you know, be dominant and go ahead and, you know, be able to handle the fight and carry the fight. It's when you over-sexualize them and then you shrink them down their role in the game that it begins to feel offensive to me. That's just, you know, kind of where I'm at with it. It really doesn't, I wouldn't look at it and immediately go, no, that's not a game for me. I would look at it and go, well, let's just have a look at what is actually happening in the game and with the character. And, you know, if that is the case and she does stay very powerful and she does stay front and center and she is able to handle everything that comes at her, I'm perfectly fine with her design, whatever. Who cares?
I just never, even back in the day, when that became a thing as far as hypersexualizing characters, I was already in my 20s and getting into my 30s. So it really didn't interest me at all. I just wanted to play the game. Is it a good game? Does it have substance? Is it more than just a sexualized or titillating character, to say the least? And that's something to me that I never really put much stock in. But again, I could see the fact that there were a lot of teenage boys that were playing those games upon that time that have fond memories of it. And recalling that period of time in their lives, I can understand why they would be drawn to this game. But I can understand the fervor that, can we just move on in our character development? And I think that that's part of the reason why that there's such an issue over this game, is where a section of this audience that is talking about this game is talking about the way it looks. And then there's a section of the audience that wants to move on from it and talk about, you know, is this game really worth your time because of how it plays?
You're listening to the Pop Culture Cosmos. If you're tired of sifting through flea markets for rare and unique games, we can help. Retro City Games in Henderson, Nevada, only 5 minutes from the Las Vegas Strip, has all your favorite gaming staples, classics, and a wide selection of rare games with new stuff always appearing on our shelves. Come in and chat with Nicole or Doug about your love of games and watch as they help you complete your collection or find your childhood favorite. And don't forget, Retro City Games loves trade-ins. So if you have any Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Sega, Xbox, PlayStation, or even PC games, come in and visit Retro City Games today. Welcome to the new metropolis of gaming, Retro City Games.
If you're going to have that kind of examination for the female characters, you need to give that kind of examination to male characters who show up in games as well.
Agreed, you know, agreed.
You can look at any game, right? And the guys don't have six packs. They have 12 packs and they have all of the obliques. And
they're
all
jacked up, yes.
Yeah, you know what I mean? That's also impossible for men to live up to. So I think if we're going to have the conversation, we need to have the conversation on both sides of it. And then we have to agree on what our expectation is in as far as an ideological aesthetic, I think is what I'm trying to say. What do we accept and what is unacceptable? And then once we look at what's unacceptable, I think we need to really examine why we find it offensive. And then maybe we can, you know, be finished with the conversation at that point. But until, you know, we've really examined it and we really understand what the expectation is as far as character designs, and how they're evolving, then I think that we're going to continue to see things like this one pop up. And again, she looks pretty badass, so I don't know that I have much of a problem with it.
Okay, that's why I wanted to go ahead and get you in on this conversation, because you know there is a substantial amount of backlash from a certain segment of the video game audience that wants to move on from this stylized form of character creation and paint a much more realistic tone to its characters. And you agree, it, you know, male characters, they're jacked up on steroids. They have been for decades. And and you know, it's just unrealistic. So it depends. Now, if you're fighting characters that are supposed to have a jacked up premise, fine, whatever, throw them out as cartoonish as you want. But if you want your game to be and approached more realistically, as far as how it constructs its narrative, please try to create characters that more resemble that type of feel, if that makes sense. You know, if you have like, for instance, an Uncharted game, I'll throw Uncharted, which I have right behind me. That game with Nathan Drake. Nathan Drake doesn't have, to my knowledge, a 6 or a 12 pack. He looks like a dude that's, you know, usually drinking on the side at the beach, and then he's called into action to look up some archaeological dig that gets into the supernatural. So it looks a little different there. And, you know, the characters all there look, they look like normal people. Why has that game resonated so well? Because I think a lot of people resonate with it. So I just think that if you go ahead and, you know, how you approach this game, do you want to approach it into a cartoonish or fantasy style setting, then you know what? Yeah. All means game on, character creation, how you like. But if you want to approach it from a realistic standing, maybe you should be a little bit more reserved in how you draw up your characters.
Sure. And, you know, that's probably a conversation that they have before they really start to work on their character developments and things like that. But, you know, even if you go to like Baldur's Gate, right, you can, I mean, the level of detail that you can craft for the character that you're going to play is intrusive, to say the least. But, you know, when I look at it, like Robbie and I, when we built our characters, when we started to play, it was really despite our best intentions, what happened was the characters were always coming out as like the best version of whatever. There, you know, I don't know how to explain that. I don't know. How do I explain what I'm trying to say and do it well and do it succinctly? I think that we have a natural inclination to look for perfection in things. And I'm not saying that this body type is perfect, because God, the back problems alone would be all consuming if we were talking about a real person, but we're not. So we're talking about a video game.
-5 hit points.
You know what I mean? Like it could really be a condition that you end up with if you were playing in D&D, you know, like, oh my God, my back is always hurting. But
have it sustained damage for the next hour.
Right. Yeah. You know, anything like that, I think is appropriate to talk about there. I just think it's a big conversation. And, you know, I think that if you don't want to play a game with that kind of character in it, then it's as easy as not spending your money on that game.
Conan Exiles. Need I say more on that one? That one got, as you said, got very descriptive on how you could design your character. And it was just like, oh my gosh. That when you talked about they having these discussions, but how they should design their characters with these development studios. And it's just like, okay, you know, it's all right. And again, I think there's also a cultural difference on how men and women are perceived in certain areas of the world. And I think we should be more cognizant of that.
That's true.
And I think that we should understand that maybe not everyone sees the world the same way and sees what success they had before with characters that were like that. So again, it's just how the world is at this point in time. We're transitioning into something different. And along the way, we're still seeing remnants of the past like we are with Stellar Blade that came out this week.
Yeah, I agree.
So what are your thoughts out there on Stellar Blade? Please let us know. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com. But before we head on out, my friend, it is Star Trek Discovery. You knew I wouldn't let you go as our biggest Star Trek fan on the show before we head on out. It is Star Trek Discovery. I think it's on episode 5. I just watched last night. And I'm not going to say it's bad. It's just there. But the problem is Discovery for me, it's been just there.
Yeah. I think
that's the reason why I'm not sad to see it go after the season, is because it's been just there, Melinda.
It's kind of a peanut butter sandwich.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the thing that you're automatically going to turn to, but you know, when you're hungry for Star Trek, you'll put it on.
What's the old saying that you have about Star Trek?
Even bad Star Trek is better than no Star Trek.
Okay, fair at all. Absolutely.
And I will stick to that until the day I die.
Okay. All right. Absolutely. But
and then maybe a couple of days after that too.
Star Trek Discovery, it just tries to go to the feels way too much. I love Sonique Martin Green as an actress. She does a tremendous job for the most part, but she's always like so emotional. And the crew of this is always so emotional each and every time out. And it kind of gets exhausting because
let me ask this question though, because Star Trek Discovery, where it lands in the Star Trek timeline, right? What if...
Well, it's way out there in the Star Trek timeline because they shot so far into the future.
Yes. But, I mean, what if What if it seems so emotional because of where it lands in the timeline? So we're not seeing the necessarily the evolved version of humanity. We're still seeing us as quite emotional, maybe? I don't know. That's just a random thought that just jumped into my head. You can feel free to completely ignore that if you like.
Well, they also still have the references from Star Trek's past. They just had a reference to the Enterprise on this latest episode. Yeah. They have a reference to Star Trek The Next Generation as far as the overlying theme, as far as what they're going after in this extended scavenger hunt that they've been doing on this season, which again, I'm not exactly thrilled with as far as the overarching premise, but it has reminiscences from Picard in Star Trek The Next Generation as far as the protagonists are concerned.
Right.
Them discovering the meaning of life. I think that's just this, again, good luck on trying to find it, but I want to just say again that it's okay. But the problem is, in the pantheon of series for Star Trek fans, I think it will forever be known as it's just okay. And I'm not sure that it will retain a memory. It reminds me a lot of Enterprise. And a lot of people just like checked out of Enterprise. They just didn't want to have anything to do with it after a while. It wasn't necessarily bad. It just was there. And the problem is, when Star Trek is just there, it doesn't help Star Trek achieve a new level of success. And I'm thankful in a way that Star Trek is ending Discovery is ending. I'm also sad that Star Trek Lower Decks is ending after its next season. But I'm thankful that they are still continuing the Star Trek pantheon with Star Trek Strange New Worlds, because that seems to be something that has energy and life to it that I think a lot of people still support.
Yeah, and I think that really does come down to the cast for that show. I just think it's an outstanding cast. I think that it feels like a Star Trek cast. And I don't really know how to explain that, but it feels like a group of people who have gotten together and said, "All right, guys, it's time to be hype. We're about to do Star Trek." Like, it just feels like that. With the biggest thing that hurt Discovery was that Strange New Worlds was so good,
where did they get their start from? Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah, so that's a big problem.
The three main characters come on that show, they scene steal every episode that they're in. But Discovery, it clearly, looks like it should be meeting its end. And again, it's not that it's bad, and it's not. It's not that it's great. It's not. It's there, and it's Star Trek. And like you said, this Star Trek, bad Star Trek, any Star Trek is better than no Star Trek at all.
Absolutely.
Well, let me hear your thoughts out there on the season so far for Star Trek Discovery. We will probably go ahead and touch on this again when they finally finish off the series. So please let us know your thoughts on Star Trek Discovery, popculturecosmos@yahoo.com. Well, my friend, we got through it, technical issues aside, but any last thoughts, my friend, before we head on out?
Let me see. Last thoughts. We're about to play through the big wedding this weekend for Vampires and Vitae. Hopefully,
you
I'm going to get
Robbie?
Back. No, not me and Robbie.
Oh, you got married already. That's right.
Yeah, we're already married in real life, IRL. We don't have to pretend that. But so the big wedding is coming up, and there's going to be some fallout and some happenings there. And we have a cast member who is leaving us due to a scheduling conflict. So there may be some stuff coming up in the next little while where we have guest players come and join us at the table, and we'll have them bring a character. We'll pull the character into an episode, and we may let the audience decide who will become the regular cast member. So I thought that might be kind of an interesting thing to explore, and we'll see how it all shakes out. At the big wedding episode is coming up, and I know it's been far too long since I've published an episode. I've gotten a little bit lazy about it, I'm gonna kick my own butt and get back to editing and stuff like that here in the next little while.
please go ahead and check out Vampires and Vitae today, wherever you get podcasts. So from Melinda Barkhouse Ross, this is Gerald Glassford. It's another beautiful day in paradise right here in the PCC Multiverse. We thank you for listening. And here's hoping you have yourself a great